Chisuta says that he is doing very well, very fine, while listening in Zambia. Thanks so much for checking us out on Facebook at VOA1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., Ana Mateo, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
Recent protests around the world have brought renewed attention to demonstrations as a form of expression and call for change. The year 2019 saw protests in Hong Kong, Lebanon, Gaza, France, Venezuela, and other places. Worldwide, protesting slowed in early 2020 because of the spread of the new coronavirus. That changed after the death of George Floyd. Demonstrations around the world were held in support of Americans protesting the death of Floyd, a black man who died after a white police officer kneeled on his neck for several minutes. In cities across the U.S., some protests turned violent as people expressed their anger over the incident and their strong desire for change. Historically, however, huge demonstrations rarely bring about results expected by those who take part in them. The Associated Press recently looked back at some important protests from the past.
People involved in Black Lives Matter say their movement is largely leaderless. Recent protests have invited comparisons to the civil rights protests of the 1950s and 1960s in the United States. In 1963, Martin Luther King Jr. led a march of 250,000 people to Washington, D.C. King and activist Malcolm X represented two different plans for protests. One supported large, peaceful demonstrations. The other wanted to get results by any means necessary. During that period, major civil rights acts and the Voting Rights Act were passed under the administration of President Lyndon Johnson. But protests against social injustice and the Vietnam War continued into the 1970s, often becoming destructive and violent.
In 1989 in Eastern Europe, protests were increasingly against rule by the Communist Party. One by one, countries like the former East Germany and Poland cut off influence of the former Soviet Union. The final Soviet leader, Mikhail Gorbachev, permitted the change to take place. The end of one-party rule in East Germany and Poland was largely peaceful. The time period also included the Velvet Revolution, which brought the end of Soviet influence in the former Czechoslovakia. The change took place about 20 years after similar protests against the Soviet Union in 1968 were crushed by hundreds of thousands of Soviet-led troops.
More than 20 years later, a major wave of political protests overtook the Middle East and North Africa. The demonstrations were captured on social media. The movement, known as the Arab Spring, gave voice to people who demanded change in their governments. In Egypt, Yemen, Libya, and Tunisia, longtime rulers fell in 2011. But only in Tunisia has democracy lasted. More recently, protests in Lebanon and Iraq started last October against leaders considered corrupt and ineffective. But Lebanon has not been able to solve its political problems and faces a severe financial crisis. In Iraq, many protesters have been killed, and the country's healthcare system remains unable to deal with the effects of the new coronavirus. In addition, money from the sale of oil has fallen sharply because of low oil prices.
Last year, huge protests against the rule of longtime Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir led to his ouster by the army in April 2019. Bashir now faces charges of genocide and war crimes. He has been replaced by a joint civilian-military sovereign council. But civilians struggle to assert control over important government ministries. Huge protests in Hong Kong renewed 1 year ago. People gathered in support of democracy and against a proposed law that would send some Hong Kongers accused of crimes to mainland China for trial. The protests were met with harsh police action, but succeeded in forcing the withdrawal of the law. However, Chinese President Xi Jinping has not backed down. Last month, China's National People's Congress approved a new national security law for the partly self-ruling territory. The new law requires Hong Kong to enforce measures that will be decided by a top committee in Beijing. The law also permits Chinese intelligence agencies to operate in the city. Britain handed Hong Kong over to China in 1997, after years of negotiations. The two sides agreed that the territory's laws, known as the Basic Law, would remain in place until 2047. But recent moves by the mainland government have raised questions about how long Hong Kong's self-rule may last. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
In Sweden, scientists are looking to a farm animal to help them find a treatment or vaccine against the new coronavirus. Researchers from the Karolinska Institute, a medical university near Stockholm, are putting their hope in a 12-year-old alpaca from Germany. Alpacas belong to the camel family. The scientists started by recreating the so-called spike protein, that permits the coronavirus to infect human cells. They then injected the spike protein into the alpaca, whose name is Tyson. The team is collecting blood samples to see whether the alpaca can develop antibodies against the spike protein. Extremely small antibodies, known as nanobodies, stick to the same part of the virus as human antibodies. In a statement to the press, the researchers called them neutralizing antibodies. If you neutralize something harmful, you take away its ability to cause harm. The head of the research team in Sweden is Gerald McErney. He said the hope is that the neutralizing antibodies will be able to effectively block the virus protein, and thereby the coronavirus, from entering cells and spreading. The results could be used to develop drug treatments or possibly a vaccine for COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. While the scientific work is still at an early stage, McErney said his team has seen evidence it could work in people. In a Reuters interview, McErney said, "In principle, all the evidence would suggest it will work very well in humans." He added, however, that it is a very complex system. McErney noted that the coronavirus mutates quite easily, so researchers need to be prepared to develop several different kinds of antibodies. COVID-19 has killed more than 400,000 people around the world. McErney explained that his team began its research back in January. At that time, they say they believed the coronavirus could become a serious pandemic. The researchers also knew it would take a long time to develop a vaccine, as well as drugs, to slow the progression of the disease and save lives, he added. Studies have shown that alpacas and other members of the camel family are known to produce nanobodies. Nanobodies are easier for scientists to work with. Sharks have also been found to produce nanobodies. But sharks are not as easy to work with as alpacas. Scientific experts say it will likely take some time to develop a vaccine for COVID-19. The team in Sweden is moving on to the next step, which could involve testing with other animals, such as mice or hamsters. The scientists say they hope their results can be used as a model for future COVID-19 research. As for Tyson, the alpaca, the researchers say his job is done. Tyson is 12 years old, I believe, and he may be looking at retirement soon, McErney told Reuters. So he'll live out his life on his farm back in Germany. I'm Anna Mateo.
The economic slowdown caused by the coronavirus led to a sharp drop in shipping traffic around the world. This has given scientists a rare chance to observe quieter oceans. One international project has been launched to listen to the sounds of the sea to study how the reduced shipping activity has affected sea life. Many scientists have long dreamed of the chance to observe the sounds of a quiet ocean. One of them is environmental scientist Jesse Ossabell. He leads the Program for the Human Environment at the Rockefeller University in New York. 11 years ago, Ossabell dreamed aloud about the possibility during a speech to university students. He asked, "What if scientists could record the sounds of the ocean in the days before engine-powered ships and boats began traveling the world? In such an environment, researchers could listen to underwater communications between blue whales hundreds of kilometers apart. They could record the sounds of groups of dolphins. Scientists could carry out the observations without human influences, with the goal of understanding the ways industrial activity affects sea life." Ossabell told the Reuters news agency that at first he suggested 1 year of quiet ocean, a period during which shipping would come to a halt, or at least be greatly slowed down. But he realized that such a period was not realistic and dropped his goal to 1 month. Then, finally, he hoped for just a few hours. His desire to create a quiet ocean experiment drew interest from about 100 supportive scientists. In 2015, the group published a plan of how to carry out the International Quiet Ocean Experiment, if the right possibility ever presented itself. That chance came in March, when the coronavirus led to an extreme economic slowdown that halted shipping traffic. Leaders of the experiment quickly organized efforts to establish a network of listening stations to pick up ocean sounds across the world. The stations use hydrophones, instruments used for listening and recording underwater sounds. In May, the group reported it had helped set up 130 underwater listening stations. The hydrophones were already in place, including 6 stations that had been set up to listen for underwater nuclear tests. But the group reported recently that it was working with the hydrophone operators to collect data that will be closely examined. One of the project's supporters is Peter Tayek, a professor of marine mammal biology at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. "Well, we're not excited that coronavirus happened, but we're happy to be able to take advantage of the scientific opportunity," he told Reuters. "It would have just been impossible any other way." Tayek says the recordings should give scientists a never-before look at the oceans with little human interference. Generally, the group will be looking to see if whales and other sea mammals changed behaviors because of the quieter oceans. For example, they will examine whether the animals used quieter signals to each other, communicated more effectively, or changed habitats. The group hopes to publish its first results this summer, followed by a full report next year on how the reduction in shipping changed the behavior of ocean mammals and other sea life. There has already been some anecdotal evidence of such behavioral changes, Ossabell said. There have been observations near Vancouver of orcas coming closer to the city than was customary, and off Scotland, he said. Ossabel noted that orcas, dolphins, and humpback whales communicate using high-frequency sounds that do not travel far. So they often gather in less deep waters. He said this may have caused some animals to move closer to once busy ports. I'm Brian Lynn.
The state of Minnesota is known as the land of 10,000 lakes. Our national park today protects four major ones. The National Park Service says water is the foundation of this wild and remote place. Welcome to Voyageurs National Park. You must have a strong desire to see Voyageurs to make the visit. It is not an easy place to get to. Much of the park is accessible only by boat. The Voyageurs, for whom the park was named, understood this well. Voyageur is a French word meaning traveler.
In the 1700s, French-Canadian fur traders started coming to the area seeking beaver fur and other animal coats. The product was in great demand in Europe. The fur traders traveled to and from the area for business. They took canoes to get around. The boat trips were often long and hard. The waters and wild animals created great dangers. Voyageur life became legendary. The men were seen as brave adventurers, but they were also romantics. They became known for singing songs as they navigated the waterways. Of course, the Voyageurs were not the first people in the area that is now Voyageurs National Park. People first arrived there about 10,000 years ago. They were mostly nomadic and did not settle permanently.
In the last 1,000 years, Native American tribes settled in the area, including the Cree, Mansoni, and Assiniboine. The Ojibwa were the residents of more modern times. They served as guides to the fur traders. They also provided canoes and other important items. Voyageurs National Park covers almost 88,500 hectares. About half of that surface is water. Creating the park was a long and difficult process. Minnesotan state lawmakers first proposed the idea in 1891. But it was 80 years before Congress established the park. President Richard Nixon signed the bill that finally established Voyageurs as a national park in 1971.
The park protects four major Minnesotan lakes: Rainy Lake, Cabotogama, Namekin, and Sand Point. Rainy is the biggest. It covers about 930 square kilometers. It is a popular fishing lake. Fishers may catch walleye, northern pike, and smallmouth bass. In the winter, thick ice covers Rainy Lake. Visitors can walk and drive on it. Rainy Lake meets with Namekin and Cabotogama Lakes at Kettle Falls. A dam was built on the falls in the early 20th century. Along with it came the Kettle Falls Hotel. It housed traders, loggers, and visitors searching for gold in the area. The hotel fell into disuse in more modern times, but in 1987, the National Park Service made repairs and improvements to the building. It is the only indoor place to stay in the area.
Nature and art meet at the Ellsworth Rock Gardens in Voyageurs National Park. Park officials describe the gardens as the showplace of Lake Cabotogama. A carpenter and artist from Chicago named Jack Ellsworth built a summer home on the lake in the 1940s. He then designed, built, and cared for the rock gardens over 20 years. The artist also created garden sculptures from native stone. There were once about 200 rock sculptures. Ellsworth stopped caring for the gardens in his older age. When the National Park Service took control of the land, the gardens needed repair and restoration. Today, it is an interesting place to visit within the park.
Voyageurs National Park may be best seen at night. Officials there like to say that half of the park comes out after dark. Certainly, much of its magic does. The most spectacular light display on Earth is sometimes visible at Voyageurs. The Aurora Borealis, or Northern Lights, appear periodically in the night sky as streaks or clouds of light. The lights are most often white or soft green. However, they sometimes deepen into colors like yellow, red, blue, and even purple. The northern lights are not always immediately recognizable, but keep watching. If the light you see comes and goes, or intensifies over time, you may be witnessing the Aurora Borealis.
Along with the northern lights, Voyageurs is a great place to see meteors. These bursts of light cross the area's black skies mostly in August during the Perseids meteor shower. Meteors, often called shooting stars, form when pieces of ice and dust cross into Earth's atmosphere and begin to burn brightly. The display of natural fireworks is a great way to finish the day at Voyageurs National Park. You can fall asleep under the stars and be sure that more extraordinary nature awaits you when day breaks in Voyageurs National Park. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.